This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Malcolm Ross, Vice President, Product Strategy and Deputy CTO at Appian.
Thanks, Ian. My name is Malcolm Ross, and of course, I lead the product strategy organization here, which covers everything from how our customers use the Appian software, measuring that, translating those requirements to our engineering organization, as well as our analyst relations and tracking the overall market, and how Appian's basically inventing new features and innovating to and responding to the market.
When you talk about responding to the market, one thing that always raises an eyebrow with me is when people tell me how they're customer-driven. Because by the time a customer knows they want a feature, they're 6 months into actually having needed that feature. By the time a vendor's built the feature and tested it and deployed it, well, we're now at the point where the customer's bored with that feature and actually now wants a different feature. How do you match customer expectation with what you deliver?
When you say customer-driven, I'd say organizations need to first be customer success-driven. That doesn't necessarily translate to features. Doesn't necessarily say a feature equals success. Success is return on investment. The customer feels satisfied with the quality of their investment. They're able to maintain the software at a reasonable cost over time. And when it comes to features, you need to have a balance between the customer expectations and the overall market. Sometimes customers ask for things that aren't really necessary or are overly specific to their specific use cases, and they're therefore not broadly marketable to other customers in that sense. Our product strategy, we try to make sure all of our customers are successful with the platform, adopting the capabilities of it, realizing a return on investment, maintaining that investment over time. Our most important measure to Wall Street, say, is what we call our net revenue retention, our ability to retain those customers and also increase their spend in the Appian product over time by making sure they're satisfied with it. When it comes to features, we were talking briefly as well around process improvement. That's the core of what Appian's about, is automation and process improvement in a low-code sense. The process improvement space is filled with all sorts of different considerations, we'll say, and how you want to achieve your process goals. Appian, while there are these hype cycles in process improvement over time, the core of what people are trying to achieve with the Appian product is not necessarily process improvement, it's the digitization of those processes. How do I automate those inside software applications? With that, there's a lot of auxiliary solutions. There's simulation, analysis, modeling, enterprise architecture, all sorts of different aspects of process that Appian is plays in the periphery of, but not necessarily core supporting of automation in that sense. You always have to take an eye of what you're looking at in product management perspective and saying, okay, what makes sense in our core mission of automation? What makes sense to, say, partner or extend and maintain the product in a different way?
How do you make that decision? Because if I look around, as companies get more successful, as the customer base grows, there's a temptation to bloat the product. Not deliberately, but it's a case of, oh, look, customers are using a whole bunch of features from that company over there. We could easily integrate that or do that ourselves, and that would bring us access to a slightly wider set of customers who'd use us a bit more. And it's part of that self-fulfilling product development strategy. Being very open about working with customers, people talk about it, but actually staying in your lane and not jumping into somebody else's can be incredibly hard. How do you make that balance?
Talking to a company that just bought an RPA company, talking about bloating it up. You have to understand your value very clearly as an organization and stay in your lane, because if you start to do too many things, you're going to get spread very thin, and then someone's going to specialize in that specific product area and do it better for you, and then maybe start to eat into your market share. Talking like our acquisition of a RPA side, and we just bought the Jidoka product integrated into Appian as Appian RPA. RPA was a market that we've been playing in the periphery of for several years, understanding, validating through partnerships with other organizations that there is a market for that for the Appian product, and then saying true that, yes, this is about automation, it's about digitization, it's about building applications inside your enterprise. So it wasn't unrelated to, say, the core mission of the Appian product. In that sense, it made sense. We wanted to make sure that customers saw the Appian platform as a central point for building any type of automation they need, and RPA was an important part of that, as the market was saying that there was a lot of demand for. Let's take the latter half of maybe areas that we're not investing in that could bloat it up. Process analysis. It's heavily correlated with process automation, because typically in the normal cycle, you want to analyze your processes, you want to mine processes, you want to understand what you have in the as-is before you build the to-be inside the digitization. But there's a whole spectrum of capabilities there in just modeling and mining processes that may or may not lead to automation. Many customers might say, Well, I have investments in a lot of, say, old SAP technology. I want to apply process mining technology to it, understand exactly what's going on inside the systems. And then once I understand what's inside the system, okay, I'm fine. I'm done. I don't need to automate it. It's already automated in an existing platform. So there has to be a fundamental need to reinvent and digitize and automate in the core Appian platform for us to realize the value. So with that example, like we also announced in January a relationship with a company called Celonis, where partnership makes more sense, where we want to trust a partner like Celonis to perform process mining and analysis and metrics, and when it makes sense, make it easy for Celonis to translate over to Appian into an automated application. But when it doesn't, they're perfectly happy with Celonis and whatever existing automation they have, then fine, it's not an Appian customer. If we were to build that ourselves, we'd be going down a rat hole. We'd be going down an area that doesn't necessarily translate into an automation activity for Appian. Again, every single feature has to be measured individually. And talking about of the most bloated products, I would say IBPMS, low-code applications, these are quite expansive products. You look at the Appian product, it has user interface design, mobile capabilities, process automation, integration, RPA. We overlap with Boomi and MuleSoft integration. We overlap with Blue Prism and UiPath and Automation Anywhere. We overlap with every workflow tool that's in every other environment. So like Salesforce, ServiceNow, they all have workflow tools as well. Well, you have that in Appian. We have interface design. We overlap with Akone, say in the mobile development space, and we compete against all the a lot of these vendors as well. We have a lot of coverage across those areas, so it becomes very important to make sure being core to your mission as far as what you were trying to achieve in low-code automation.
You mentioned RPA and processes. Processes have always been something in my mind where somebody comes up with one, they go get a bunch of stone tablets, they carve the process in it, and that shall never change. There's nothing more frightening, particularly in a security perspective, when people say, but we've always done it that way. But we live in a world where processes are becoming as ephemeral as lines of code. When a user takes a low-code product and uses that with RPA and other things to reduce some of their daily grind, that changes the processes that they do.
It does, yeah.
How do we begin to capture that? Because we've had 20 years of business process re-engineering, which doesn't really seem to have taken many companies forward, and that assumed a fairly static, steady rate of change, not the constant that we have at the moment.
Looking back over the past 10, 20, 30 years, if you look at those process reengineering efforts, oftentimes they were documentation efforts. And then you ask the people who are actually executing the processes and say, does this represent your work? And like, no. It was impossible for the process engineering experts, the TQM people, the Six Sigma people, to keep pace on the changes, the fluidity of what processes really were in the implementation. And that was very much in the physical space. I've seen even environments that were openly hostile to each other, where the business process engineers had a very bad relationship with the IT guys. The process engineers would go down to the IT guys and say, hey, this is what we think your process is. And the IT guys would say, whatever, you produce some pretty documentation. We're going to actually build this in our software application. It's going to work the way that we know it needs to work. What tools like Appian and BPM tools in general have been trying to do is always bridge the gap. Not sure, are you familiar with the BPMN specification from the OMG? The very opening paragraph of that specification is like the whole point of this specification was to get business and IT aligned, to break down those barriers of communication by having a more common lexicon of how we're going to talk about process between IT and business, as well as to make it more fluid in how business can capture processes and then how they're actually implemented inside the organization. What you've seen since the BPMN spec came out in, 2004 or so, is a steady increasing digitization of processes. More and more, any process that we interact with participates in a digital exchange, even now with mobile devices and warehouses and RFID tags and our ability to track anything digitally allows us to now incorporate all this stuff into actual processes and BPM systems and automation platforms. With that, we've seen a slow alignment of business and IT on process reengineering, on process organization, in merging the concepts of what I would call DevOps with process engineering. Should be the ultimate goal as full digitization. So it becomes more of a DevOps issue of how I do change management. If I'm changing a process, I'm changing an actual diagram, and then I'm pushing it through the DevOps cycle. I'm doing comparative diffing, I'm branching and merging, I'm doing A-B testing on maybe different digital processes, I'm pushing it through dev test production, I'm doing user acceptance testing, I'm getting real analytical data that occurs typically in the IT DevOps cycle. It can now occur in process engineering. For try to give any advice for IT developers who are used to DevOps using GitHub and source code control and these tools, you really should teach yourself business processes because that's the communication of your business. IT needs to become familiar with the language of the business of how they want to manage their organization in a digital orchestration. And the business needs to teach themselves DevOps. It's not fine for a process engineer to say, I built my documentation. Look, I'm done. It's like, no. The real world says it's going to change next week. It's going to change again. And IT professionals have perfected this in a DevOps lifecycle and agile development techniques to say, okay, we're going to do these types of branching and merging and A-B testing. And you need to teach yourself these practices to push actual process change through the cycle.
One of the interesting things that came out of RSA was a comment from Veracode. And that is, if we want to solve DevSecOps, security needs to understand developers. They need to learn the language developers use. They need to understand how developers function. It seems that the whole bit about IT understanding the business is very similar. Yet, this is a conversation we've had for 20 years. IT doesn't understand business. Business doesn't understand IT. No matter how much we do in terms of taxonomies to get them to talk together, there will be differences in how those various words and phrases are interpreted. How do we resolve that conflict in such a way that we have a seamless transition between a business view of a process and an IT encapsulation of that process? Because it's easy here to think this is what it wants. It's much harder over here to actually physically build that.
If you look at the organizations that are being successful today, like the Ubers of the world and the Amazons of the world, there almost is no business IT boundary. It's the organizations fundamentally are IT-driven business organizations where the two work hand in hand. The business people who are trying to do, say, promotions on Amazon and upsell, cross-sell, and things like that fundamentally understand how IT works and how those two organizations work together. So you need to drive towards that. If you want to transform your organization, you need to break down those barriers, hire IT-focused business people and hire IT people who are going to be collaborative with the business. You also, as you said, you have to have a common lexicon. You need to be able to communicate well. So there are standards out there, like we talked about the OMG BPMN standard, the DMN standard for decision modeling notation, for business rules. You need to settle on a common communication framework that is granular enough for IT to understand how it gets implemented in an actual application. So there's considerations like variables and data structures and things that business needs to be aware of. And then the business also, or the business user needs to use a lexicon that IT can also understand that communicates things like SLAs and return on investment and business goals and business metrics need to be communicated in a common platform. Or I'm a strong proponent of the OMG standard. BPMN, I think, is a great foundation of that. And we recommend adopting tools that to use that as well. But going back to your original question, it's just a slow breaking down those communications. You shouldn't have IT and business really as separate organizations. If you're going to spin up a new project, you should have a composite organization that's comprised of both IT and business working together on a single goal where the business adapts to their IT patterns for DevOps, DevSecOps, and the IT is highly collaborative with the business. Your original question, though, is, well, going back to the DevSecOps, yeah, security is now also a major concern. As you digitize everything, you no longer benefit through security through physical access because that's broken down. Anything on the internet's easily accessible via internet connection, and you no longer benefit security through obscurity. Just people don't understand how your business works. These things are much more transparent in a digital realm. So you need to have tight security. Security is a highly multifaceted thing. So it's part of the DevOps cycle of how you push things. It's incorporating security in the reviews, but as well, it's a behavior of how developers work and how business thinks of their implementations. Take an example like Appian. We do not release GA software unless it goes through a third-party independent audit. We have quarterly release cycles. Every single end of our release cycle, we have an EA, early access release. Then we send it out to a third-party auditor who gets access to all of our source code as well as does aggressive penetration testing of our cloud environment. It doesn't go through the GA cycle until it passes all those with flying colors. If that means, this happens sometimes for us, if it doesn't pass it, yeah, your planned marketing event for having a GA doesn't get delayed because of viruses. It can get delayed because of security holes. and you take that seriously. You don't actually release software, release new solutions, unless it goes through these proper cycles. Other things that Appian's doing specifically to help our customers is we can only do so much on the platform, but then our customers are responsible for configuring the security of the application. Just trying to make that more intuitive, having guardrails, security checks, where you can do a full analysis, and that you need to incorporate those security reviews in the agile development cycle. Say, okay, we're going to incorporate a security audits, we're going to incorporate security design in any application design.
I'll come back to different users and their view of the platform in a second, but one question before we do that. You talked there about sending out to a third party for an audit. It's a very brave thing. There are very few organizations in this business that would use an external organization to actually sign off a release. How did you get there, and what benefits does that give you?
Appian, if you know the history, we grew up in a DoD military organization. We always had this operate in our mindset. Our first implementations were, if you're familiar with the CIPRNet here in the U.S., top secret networks. Security was ingrained in us early on as far as our manifestation of the product. Again, I'd say we put customer success at the highest focus, and the risk of having one of our customers operating on Appian environment and then having a security issue just put the entire us at risk as well. Because if that customer is ever going to not be successful because of these major issues, it would impact the fundamental success of our organization. But with that, it's also you can't trust. It's segregations of duties and financials. Same thing if you're a publicly traded organization, you have your financials audited by a third party. You're trusting all of your banking records and all your transactions to be reviewed by a third-party auditor. If your organization's becoming a fully digital organization, it just makes sense. Your operations should be security audited, reviewed by someone who's outside of the realm of the business and IT defining it, so to make sure that there's no improper responsibilities like, okay, the IT guy or the business guy, just to make a marketing goal, is going to push software out the door faster than it was ready. He knows there's some security holes, but he just wants to meet his business goals. That can happen. And that's stopped by having a third pair of eyes look at that and say, no, these are the security issues with the product.
But you say that can happen. It's not that it can. It does happen. And we're in a world now where the needs of the business override, if you like, the needs of that QA cycle. How does a commercial organization, a customer of yours, adopt that approach and say, ooh, works for Appian, look at the quality we get. How do we go down that line and find a third party who can sign off? And how do they balance that against the pressure from those business units?
Yeah. It's twofold. As far as how do you find a company, and there's plenty of them out there. I wouldn't recommend one. I think we work with NTT Group as our third-party auditor. How you accomplish that in the business IT alignment to make sure they're not fudging over a security issue is really through agile methodology. If you're talking to your business every week, every 2 weeks at least, in your sprint cycles, then you're having these conversations, you're checkpointing, you're making code complete, and you know where you are. If you're doing waterfall design, that's when you get in trouble, because then you have this big scope. The IT goes out and builds something for 3 months, doesn't checkpoint back with the business. The business does all these date sets of like, okay, you know, we have set this waterfall approach. We're going to launch in June. And then 3 months later, the IT organization comes back and says, oh, sorry. If you're communicating constantly and fluidly every single day, every single week, every 2 weeks at least, then you don't have these issues. You're able to make these changes as you go. And that's the core of Agile. Agile is not faster. Agile means more responsive and adaptive to change. So you can say, well, I'm going to maybe change my MVP scope. I'm going to change my specific deliverable goals. I'm going to change the business dates based on what I'm learning every single day. And that's, I would say, the core of that business IT alignment, constant communication, checkpointing back with IT of where things stand.
I said I'd come back to that, how people view the platform, and it ties back to what you said at the end, that whole issue of what people see. Let's take a typical business process fail point. A new piece of compliance comes out. Company forms a committee, they tear through this compliance over several months, they work out what needs to change in corporate systems as they understand them, and there's a critical phrase, and they issue a document out to different parties. DBA gets the document, takes one look at it, laughs, because, yeah, no, can't do that here. Well, I'll do best effort. But nobody ever feeds back what that best effort means to that compliance committee. Nobody ever does an audit assessment of, did the rules as laid out by law, as interpreted by compliance, actually get instantiated in IT? If not, how do we balance that out? How do we find some compromise that works? As a single platform where you have eyes on from all those different groups, How do you increase that visibility? A phrase you've used already today, a phrase Michael used with me earlier today. How do you increase that visibility to actually deal with that process to instantiation problem?
The first mistake of your example is they involve the DBA 3-4 months later. It's a bit of a cultural challenge. You can't solve it with just a product. You have to incorporate IT. If you know this is going to be implemented in your financial systems or whatever system you choose, you need to incorporate IT right up front and listen to them as far as what's possible, what's not possible. You need to have good IT talent. When it comes to a low-code platform like the Appian product, what we try to do, though, is many of the considerations that IT needs to go through, we're trying to remove, such as maintainability, upgradability, platform maintenance. There's other things that IT worries about other than that new regulation. They worry about Java deprecating Java 8 to Java 9. They worry about upgrading their MySQL or Oracle databases. They worry about regular penetration testing. The TLS 1.1 and HBS protocol got deprecated. It got penetrated by some Russian hackers years ago. So you're not supposed to use TLS 1.1. You got to upgrade your web service TLS 1.2, 1.3. So there's all these little considerations that IT needs to worry about. What Appian tries to do is take all those little considerations off the table from IT. So they don't have to worry about these things. Appian is a professional IT organization, independently audited. We're going to maintain all those little things for you. What you just need to worry about now is the implementation of your business logic in the system. Now, you can still do that wrong, but the only way to do that right is to, again, incorporate the implementers early on in the decision cycles, as far as if you have a new regulation. And then the second thing we can do is try to make sure that the implementation of those is, again, in a lexicon that both IT and business understand, such as instead of translating that new regulatory rule into Java or .NET code, it's translated in a decision modeling notation decision table that can be easily understood by the business. You can sit in a JAN session with the business, modeled out and say, is this what you mean? Okay, I can hit test, I can test it, and then save it right there and implement it. From the IT perspective, it's, again, the tool set that makes it easy to communicate to business, and the platform that removes the little things that IT has to worry about so they can focus on the business value.
So if I'm sitting in front of you as the CEO of an organization and I'm being told we need to go and bring Appian in here, and I'm worried about this disconnect between my business and IT by my processes and my security and everything else, what are the key things you're going to tell me need to be fixed in my business when I take on the platform? Because clearly you've mentioned culture and other issues. Where do I start? What do I do?
Going back to what I just said, you got to recognize fully if you're COO, you might not recognize everything your IT organization does. And again, to reiterate what I just pointed out is recognize the responsibility you put on IT. By running everything on-premise, by doing all of your own IT development work, there's a lot of technical debt, we'll say, that's brought on by your organization that they need to pay down. You need to focus on eliminating that technical debt by choosing platforms that help you maintain it. You don't want to be in the business of worrying about the latest iOS release. So iOS 13 came out last year, coming out with iOS 14. You built a mobile application. Is your mobile app going to work on the iOS 14 when it releases in September? Maybe, maybe not. Your engineers have to dedicate probably at least a month to do quality assurance testing every single year to make sure it runs on the latest iPhone that your CEO wants to go out and buy. You can take that off the table. Choose a platform that says we're automatically going to take whatever mobile app you build, upgrade to the latest iOS version. And then, great, you don't have to worry about that. Same thing with all the other things I mentioned, Java, .NET architectures, database architectures, web server architectures, application servers, all these things that you have to maintain. Stop burning your IT organization from maintaining it. Let organization maintain that for you so you can focus on actual building a business applications. Once you unleash that maintenance responsibility from IT, you then can take those IT resources and focus them on that business collaboration. You can't expect IT to collaborate with business and still maintain all that burden. It's too much work. You're not going to be able to do it. From that side, you have to unleash that burden, take away the technical debt. Once IT is freed, then realign your organization. Don't treat them as an IT org and a business org. You set up what we call an Appian pods. You want to have these little business unit pods. Ideal pod sizes are usually like 5 to 10 people, small collaborative groups, a mix of business and IT, a program manager overseeing it. You also want to have what we would call a center of excellence. So you typically want to have have one IT organization called a COE that's overseeing the implementation of all these. They're going to be defining your DevOps practices, your DevSecOps practices, the procedures that everyone must adhere to ensure the software quality, as well as opportunities for reuse. If you see someone building an application over here that uses a certain component and you see someone else building something similar, you want to maybe align those resources or say, hey, just reuse what this guy used to accelerate overall development. So the COE is going to have that overall look and best practices of how software gets to market, and then small development pods teamed with the business to basically build those applications.
It's interesting. I look at the numbers we see on a regular basis about the amount of money spent on maintenance. I look at the increasing amount of not just technical debt, but security debt from Agile.
Yeah.
And the one thing that becomes a constant is as soon as we start to talk about how we can reduce that cost, that money doesn't go back into IT and better systems. Somebody somewhere crunching numbers in the business says, hey, we can get rid of a bunch of people and save money. Malcolm, thank you for talking with me today.
No problem. Thank you, Ian. It's been a pleasure.